morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Boy, I am struggling to try to figure out what to do about this trip we really want to take in the first week of September. You know, you have a thing you really have to do or really want to do, and all you read about is delays with traveling, delays with traveling. Now we have a kind of a, well, I guess they're going to do their jobs, but airport screeners in Ottawa are going to be wearing their street clothes as a protest because they say they're short-staffed and overworked and forced into overtime. And CTV interviewed a woman yesterday. I thought she was just a traveler. She was traveling. She was traveling with her family. And she said later that she's also a vacation consultant. I don't know what that is, but I think I'd be really good at that. I'm really good at vacation. I would love to consult people on their vacation. But she said, I wouldn't travel right now if I were you. Just don't. She said the problems will sort themselves out. But maybe it's a good idea to put off that trip if it's by air. Then you see the price of gas, you think, well, do I really want to drive? Or have you ever traveled by rail in this country? It is pathetic.
I've never been on time taking the train.
Ever.
I don't know what it is, because I don't do it often, like a few times a year. I thought it was just me.
Well, it's because VIA's just a passenger itself on these rail lines where they give priority to freight trains. So there's always a delay. I was picking up Sylvie from the airport, not from the airport, from the Fallowfield station on Friday. And she was 20 minutes out, and she said, we just got an update. We're going to be 10 minutes late. How are you 10 minutes late on a 20-minute part of the trip?
I know.
It was unbelievable. And her trip was pretty good. She caught up with the people who left a couple of hours ahead of her. She was only like 30 minutes behind those people. Yeah, it's not VIA's fault, really. It's just the way the system works. They don't have designated rail lines. And it's too bad because once you're on board, you ever travel business class on VIA? The food is great usually and it's comfortable and you can I like it. I like it as a way to travel. Just looking out the window and watching your country go by. I always wanted to do a cross Canada rail trip, but with delays like that. So what are the options? Maybe it really is time to reconsider whether you travel any kind of distance. David Lipton is a representative for the United Steelworkers Union. He says the workers, I know these people have odd unions representing them, right? Your airport screeners and your, what? The Steelworkers Union. Okay, whatever. Workers are feeling burnt out.
Our members are working for hours and hours and hours without breaks, in many cases with forced overtime. Their rates of pay are just not up to par. Many senior employees are leaving to find other employment as a result.
Yeah, you know what I worry about is that we're entering a period of real labor unrest. Because everywhere you go, you hear people talk about the hours that they're putting in. And the fact that their paycheck is shrinking literally by the day. Because while your paycheck may be staying the same, everything costs more. So your paycheck is worth less. Not worthless, but worth less every passing day. So maybe this is where people are going. We keep hearing about a worker shortage. Maybe they're like, well, I'm working and I'm poor. So I might as well stay home, cut the costs of traveling to work and the expenses. Because working costs money too, right? Unless you can work out of your own backyard, which a lot of people have been doing and now can't anymore. More and more companies are calling people back. Adds to your expense the minute you have to travel to work. You're like, well, by the time I pay for gas and parking and all those things, I'll just collect unemployment insurance and stay home. We can't have that. We can't become less productive. And there seem to be more jobs than there are people. What does that mean? I've been warning companies about this on the air for years. You know, when there are more workers than there are jobs, you could treat people like crap. But if it ever turns around, if the roles ever reverse, you're going to be in big trouble. is you haven't bought any worker loyalty. And worker retention is going to be, I think, in the next year or so, the biggest problem our economy faces. Recruiting and retaining employees. Right? Can't find them. Can't keep the ones I have. What happens next? What happens next is what you see at the airport. Chaos. More lineups. More delays. More services that are not available. More products that you can't get. And if the product is short, people who really want it will pay more for the few items that are available. That pushes up inflation. That makes workers even more angry. That's why the Federal Reserve in the U.S. is saying, oh, we got another big interest rate coming. We are, they're at war now with inflation. They're going to get tough. These interest rates are going to soar in the next little while because they know as much as the interest rates have gone up, we're not even close to being able to put a cap on inflation right now. So yeah, I worry about that. Worry about that every day. And if I owned a business, I'd be really nice to my employees right now. And hope that you weren't so bad in the past that they don't just look at you and go, yeah, whatever, dude. Who are you kidding? Because the other thing is, you could just stay home. It's not worth it. Or you can, there are 10 jobs in my field today that I could do or in a related field and make more money because they're recruiting.
Yep.
You make your money on the way into a job, not on your way out. The U.S. Treasury Secretary says a recession, though, recession, which usually puts an end to inflation, right? Suddenly, boom, the economy starts to shrink. People start to lose their jobs. Prices start to go down, or at least they hold still. Janet Yellen says she expects the American economy to slow in the months ahead, but notes that consumer spending still strong and unemployment is low. She defended the Federal Reserve Chairman's decision to raise interest rates at a time when inflation is soaring.
His goal is to bring inflation down while maintaining a strong labor market. That's going to take skill and luck, but I believe it's possible.
You know, we need more robots.
Oh, really?
Not enough workers. Remember when I was a kid in school, we dreamed about flying cars and robots? We need more of those because people don't want to do a lot of these jobs. So more automation. That used to scare people, right? More automation. I'm just going to take my job away. Now people are like, take my damn job. I don't want it. University of Calgary researcher says work is continuing on developing an autonomous robot that can help first responders. They're going to have robots for everything. Alex Ramirez Serrano from the Roboterium Lab says it's not science fiction. There will be a time when these kinds of robots will be able to enter disaster areas and think for themselves while conducting rescues. But he says remains to be seen if the public will be okay with that.
If somebody sees this on the street, some people might be really excited. Some other people might be freaking out. Some people might run, and the robots are coming to get us, right? So it's also how ready we are on accepting this technology.
Yeah, I won't be thinking about Skynet if my house is burning and a robot enters the bedroom and says, I'll carry you out. Go nuts.
But can they give us warning they're unleashing the robots before like your house is on fire and it comes in? Because that would be weird.
It probably would make the news.
Okay.
We'd probably know that the city of Ottawa
got it.
Was buying them.
Then I'm
and,
okay.
And if the city of Ottawa bought them, you know that they wouldn't work.
No, they'd be late.
We hired robotic firefighters, but we didn't realize that they don't work very well in the heat.
No. They'd be called to a fire in Manitic. They'd be out in Orleans somewhere, lost.
Well, here's another option. I was reading this morning that they're training rats to rescue people.
Oh.
Rescue rats. I am not kidding. You know, when people, what? There's like an earthquake or an explosion and people are trapped in the rubble, they can train rats to go in and find people.
That's actually pretty cool.
The trick is stopping them from eating you once they find you.
Yeah.
I guess they put little cameras on them, right? They send them down and there you are. Oh, hello, little rat. Put the camera on. But at least put a uniform on it. So yes. I can tell it from the other rats.
That one just wants to gnaw your leg.
Yeah, exactly. This one's here to rescue you. This one's here to consume you. 6:15, the morning rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
.625, it's the morning rush. Good morning. Ottawa Public Health has received a very limited supply of monkeypox vaccines. Think there'll be a lineup for monkeypox vaccines?
No.
I can't have another virus. We can't have this in our society. It's too much. It's too much all at once. The Public Health Agency of Canada says 141 cases have been reported in Quebec, in Ontario. It's 21, 4 in Alberta, 2 in British Columbia. Dr. Theresa Tam, who is, you may remember her from the pandemic. She is Canada's chief public health officer, who in the beginning was front and center at telling us to lock down. And then the federal government realized, wow, people are getting mad. Let's make that a provincial responsibility. And so Theresa Tam pretty much disappeared. Anyway, she says, all infections so far have been in men aged 20 to 69.
However, the risk of exposure to monkeypox virus is not exclusive to any group or setting. Anyone, no matter their gender or sexual orientation, could get infected and spread the virus if they come into close contact with someone who has monkeypox or the objects that they have used, like personal objects, towels, or bed linens.
So what does she want? All of us to go get a monkeypox vaccine now? I don't know. I think that's a pretty low number in Ontario. 21 people. I don't think I'll be running out to get a monkeypox
vaccine. No, just respect personal space. You should be okay.
Yeah, and monkeypox is fairly obvious when people have it. So you have a friend who has monkeypox, well, go to the Medical Officer of Health's website, go to Ottawa Public Health, and see how to take care of it. And, I mean, I guess it's good advice not to share a towel with someone with monkeypox. Who would be doing that, really? Do we not have enough common sense? Although I'm not convinced that even after you could educate people for 2 years, and there's still people walking down the street wearing a mask trying to avoid COVID. What do you, like, I get it. You're running from a store to your car in the winter and your hands are full. I'll just leave the mask on. Besides, it's warmer. But I see people still walking their dog in the middle of nowhere at a dog park wearing a mask. And I know they're not doing anybody any harm, right? It's like, okay, fine. But after 2 years of being educated about COVID, people still don't understand. So I guess maybe you do need to tell people, if you're living with someone with monkeypox, stay away from them, don't touch them, don't share a towel. Who shares a towel anyway? It's my towel. Whoa, whoa, don't use my towel.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever shared a towel with anyone.
No. I mean, I know exactly where my bath towel hangs. Should anyone touch that, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, it's got its own hook, right? As it should.
Well, there's just this interesting kind of, they're trying very hard not to offend anyone. Look, so far it's only men, but it's not. But you weren't alive during the early days of AIDS.
Yeah.
And back then it was seen as just a disease for gay men, although in Africa that wasn't true. But so, you know, it was hard to give people the correct information. That your odds of catching AIDS were very small unless you were engaging in high-risk sex. But no one wanted to offend anyone, and so it was hard just to be factual about it. Not a judgment on anybody's choices. It's just that some sex acts are easier to contract viruses than others. So practice safe sex. Make sure the person you're sleeping with doesn't have monkeypox, and we should all be okay. And, you know, I think if I was living with someone who had monkeypox, even if they were just like, a cousin or a roommate, I'd probably get the vaccine. Just because it's hard to avoid every surface in the house as somebody else. And you can get it from surfaces. But anyway, that's the latest thing now we all have to learn about.
All right.
Another reason to wear a mask and gloves, I guess. 6:29, the morning rush.
And now, Bill's best binges.
I'm already cooked.
What will you be watching?
Well, I have a good one for you today. A friend of mine has been talking to me about this for... No, not talking. Lobbying me about this for a couple of weeks. Have you seen The Offer. Have you seen The Offer? Did you see The Offer yet? Have you started to watch The Offer? Did you watch The Offer? We just finished The Offer. Oh, it's even better than I thought of it. Have you seen The Offer? And I said, what the hell is The Offer?
I'm a serious man and I'm committed to making a serious movie.
I assume the word is already out.
This could become a cultural phenomenon.
You want me to take care of it?
They say movies are magic. We put the magic on the screen.
And action.
And ain't nothing gets in the way of that.
So it's a TV series about making a movie? See, now, one of the greatest movies ever made. But do I want to see a TV series about that? I really had trouble understanding it. You know what put me over the top? Matthew Good, the English actor, great actor. He plays Robert Evans, the head of Paramount Studios. And in an interview, he said, think of it as like The Crown. So it's, yes, it's based on the facts of what it was like to try to make this groundbreaking movie. But some of it is fictionalized. But it's actually written by a guy named Al Ruddy. And Al Ruddy is the center of the story. He's a real guy, a Canadian from Montreal, who moved to Hollywood and became a movie producer. And Al Ruddy is the guy who wrote this TV series. He's not a young man anymore, but he wrote about his experience getting The Godfather made at a time when, you have to understand, the mob did not want this movie made. Because it was being made based on the book, The Godfather, which the Italian community at the time was up in arms about the stereotyping of Italians, Italian-Americans specifically. And so the mafia was trying to step in and get it stopped. Now, there were rumors at the time, and it seems since the guy who produced the movie wrote the script for this great TV series, I guess it's true that Frank Sinatra didn't like the fact that the singer in the movie, many people thought it was based on him. And so he was trying to get it stopped using his connections within organized crime to get it stopped. This TV series is fascinating because I love Hollywood and movie making and all of those things and seeing what happens on the set and watching the director of the movie and the author of the book work together to write the script. And they're talking about scenes that are just so famous. I mean, such iconic scenes about how they made them and the meaning of the scene. Why does Al Pacino hold on to the gun after he kills someone instead of doing what his uncle told him to do, drop the gun right away and walk out? Why does he hold on to it for that extra minute? What is going on in his mind? What does it symbolize? All of that stuff I couldn't get enough of. But let me tell you about the performances. Miles Teller is Al Ruddy, the main producer. Miles Teller, you know, the drummer from that drumming movie, who's in just about everything these days. Great young actor. Juno Temple from Ted Lasso.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She plays his assistant. Matthew Good, I mentioned, as the head of the studio. Giovanni Ribisi as mobster Joe Colombo is terrific. The guy who plays the young Al Pacino, when he first appears on screen, you will gasp. I thought it was a trick. I thought they'd taken a clip of Al Pacino in a restaurant. Not only does he look just like him, this actor portrays his mannerisms so well, it's stunning. And you probably have seen Justin Chambers. He's one of the doctors in Grey's Anatomy. You know, the kind of good-looking one, but not. He's been there right from the beginning. He plays, sit down for a minute and just don't judge. He plays the Godfather. He plays Marlon Brando. And you'll get chills.
Really?
There's a scene where they go to his house based on true story, how he became the Godfather. And he's in his own home in Hollywood, and he's agreed to do this film, but they want to get some footage of him. So they bring a silent movie camera. Francis Ford Coppola, the director, brings a silent movie camera. And Marlon Brando walks up to a mirror and he takes out some shoe polish and he starts to do his hair and he stuffs some Kleenex into the bottom of his cheeks and he turns around. And as Francis Ford Coppola put it later, at that moment, Marlon Brando disappears and the Godfather is standing in front of you. And in this case, Justin Chambers disappeared and became Marlon Brando, who disappeared and became the Godfather. It is excellent. I'm not even done yet. I think I'm 5 episodes in. I can't wait for this show to be over to finish it. Please rain so I don't have to do any outside chores.
That's an interesting idea for a show.
I didn't think the premise was strong enough, but it is more than strong enough.
Okay.
To handle it. It's called The Offer, and I'm watching it on Apple TV.
I love that. I think that's amazing.
What do you have to beat that?
I don't know if it'll beat it.
Thank
but
you, Charles Bordelot, for that suggestion, by the way.
All right. Okay, this one's interesting. It's based on a true story, and you've probably watched the Netflix documentary that kind of went crazy a few years ago. But it's on HBO, or I guess it's on Crave in Canada. It's called The Staircase.
I'd like to make a toast to so many better days ahead. Every day is going to be an adventure. So always stop and think. This is one of the happiest days of my life.
To the Petersons. To us.
911, what are your emergency?
11, she had an accident.
What kind of accident?
She fell down the stairs.
So Colin Firth plays Michael Peterson. In 2001, his wife died. She was at the bottom of the staircase. He claims that he was upstairs in the house and he came back and he found her like this. Just dead. Her body's a mess. She's clearly mangled. He says it's from her falling down the staircase. The TV show starts with their... I would say late teenage, early adult son still lives at home. He was out at a party. He comes home. All of a bunch of police and emergency responders are there. And he talks his way in. It's not a crime scene yet. He says, listen, this is my house. My dad and my stepmom live here. Can you let me in? The cops let him in. And his stepmom's body's right at the end of the staircase. And he goes up to his dad and he says, Dad, she's dead. And he goes in and starts to like hug her body. Now, I've watched enough TV crime shows to know that's probably not something they should be allowing.
Don't touch the evidence.
They don't declare it a crime scene until after that happens. Now, he maintains that he's innocent. The Crown believes she didn't fall down the stairs. She was probably violently attacked and pushed down the stairs. In episode 3, all of a sudden a French documentary crew comes in to start filming. Somewhere along the way, they convinced Michael Peterson to let them film him, interview his children, and all of this stuff. That footage was released in 2004 for a documentary that was re-released on Netflix in 2018. So you probably know this case. I didn't watch the 2018. Did you watch it? The Staircase?
No.
On Netflix? But it was part of that true crime phenomenon.
But this is a dramatized version.
And then this is a dramatized version of it, yeah, with Colin Firth.
Toni Collette's in it. She's excellent.
She's fantastic. So she plays Kathleen Peterson, the wife whose body, like I said, is at the stairs. But there's a lot of flashbacks, so she's in the scene quite a bit. And one moment in the first episode that kind of stood out to me to make you realize that this is not quite right. Case takes place late in 2001, but they flash back to a moment where she's at a party. And she dives into the pool, and it looks like she sort of hit her head. Not paralyzed by any means, but she had to spend time in the hospital. So she wakes up in the hospital all kind of confused on 9/11. And she's like, what's going on? And he just ignores his wife completely. The fact that, you know, she just woke up from basically a mini coma. He's like, looks like there's a terrorist attack at the World Trade Center. And then the scene just cuts away. And it just stood out to me as, this dude's weird.
A little callous.
Yeah, like I know that's a massive event, but your wife just woke up from a coma, man. So it's...
Yeah, for most people, that personal incident would trump what was going on in the rest of the
right. And so that moment just stood out to me. Yes. And so many people back when they watched the Netflix series were trying to go back and forth. Do you think he did it? There's no doubt in my mind anyway, because I think it's supposed to have the same effect on you. Do you think he did it? No doubt in my mind from the second that show started. And
it's
I know
like
it's
that
scripted.
Big, famous, one of the first podcasts about the murder mystery. Remember that? What was that called?
Making a Murder? No, that was a TV show. Serial.
From start to finish, I never had any doubt. And I wondered why they even bothered to make the podcast. And the only person sucked in and charmed by this guy was the person who made the
taking
podcast.
All the calls.
Like, you know, you're trying to convince us this is a mystery, but it's not a mystery. You're the only one thinking there's a mystery here. So I don't know if that does that speak well for the staircase or not.
Well, I haven't seen the documentary. I thought the acting strong. I still have one or two more episodes left. It just ended. It just finished last week. So it's now all out on Crave. You can watch it all.
The Staircase.
I think it's worth your time.
And The Offer. Two good ones.
Now I'm going to watch The Offer. That sounds amazing.
Morning Rush. Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Bill.
All right. We've known for a while that peanut allergies can be treated. Now there's a study that says the earlier, the better. If you want to make sure your kid can live a life without being afraid of peanuts. Do you treat patients for peanut allergies?
No, because that really, this type of peanut allergy treatment requires a pediatric allergist. You have to see them in the community or in the hospital, and it is monitored. So, and still right now, for the most part, is still part of studies. But so this is one of many studies that are showing the same outcome, that if you treat children, and the younger you treat them, the better, with a peanut powder to desensitize them to peanuts, starting at as young as 6 months of age, the outcomes are actually pretty good. That in the end, most of the children that are treated can tolerate about 15 peanuts or 4 grams of peanuts. So in terms of exposure and accidental exposure, there's a huge buffer of safety for the child so that they don't have any severe reactions. And that's basically...
Does that mean they couldn't necessarily sit down and eat a whole package of peanuts?
Yeah, that's pretty much what that means, is that, you know, they still have, by definition, a peanut allergy, but at the same time, the quantity of peanuts that they can consume gives them enough leeway that if they had 3 or 4 or 5 peanuts, and usually they're going to be avoiding them anyway. So it's more in foods or, you know, in a package or, you know, has, you know, this product may contain peanuts, that kind of thing.
Well, we're also told that on an airplane, you shouldn't eat peanuts because some people just smelling it on your breath could have an impact. Did that turn out to be true?
I don't see how that happens, right? You have to react to the protein that's in the peanuts themselves. Now, what can happen is when someone smells peanuts, they can have a visceral reaction, right? They just become anxious that there's peanuts around, and they can have a reaction that's not necessarily an allergic reaction.
Got it.
So, but you have to consume the peanuts for the protein to be able to affect you. I mean, when you think about it, when you touch peanuts, people that have allergies to peanuts, you don't really see a major reaction unless they consume it. You may get a local redness on the skin if the peanut oil is absorbed into the skin, but otherwise you don't really see very much. So again, this study published in the Journal of Clinical, had 69 children that are under 12 months of age, and out of 452 that were all the children were under the age of 5. And of those 69, 42 completed the build-up period and 1 year maintenance. So it's quite an investment in time. But of those, none of them really had any severe reactions. They had mild reactions. Parents were shown how to deal with it. 7 infants dropped out and 20 didn't do the assessment after they completed the whole thing at the end of the study to see whether they were, how they responded. But for the most part, it was because of choice, because of long wait lists. So the bottom line, though, is that it's a safe procedure to do, repeated many times in different studies, and likely is to become a standard of care to reduce the risk of allergic reaction to peanuts.
Okay, so the younger the better, in children 6 months to 12 months. How would I even know my child is allergic to peanuts that early on? How many kids are even eating peanuts at 8 months old?
Yeah, so the recommendations are to start giving peanut butter or peanut products to children 6 months of age, irrespective of whether there's any concern of allergic reactions. And the
people are doing the opposite these days a lot. The parents I talk to say, just in case they have a peanut allergy, we're not giving them any peanuts.
So that actually can make the situation worse because you're avoiding the exposure, so their bodies never get used to seeing what's in their environment. And so it's counterintuitive, but that's what you have to do, is that you have to provide them with the exposure to peanuts, because the risk to the child when you give them peanuts at 6 months of age, from this study and many others, demonstrate that if they do get a reaction, it's going to be, for the most part, it's going to be mild.
So our hypervigilance about peanuts may actually have been making the situation worse.
That's right. And you see that with a lot of different types of allergies, is that it's the avoidance of exposure basically untrains the body, and you have even a greater reaction later on. So they found, for example, that for infants, when you first started treating them, only one third had a mild reaction. So remember, none of them needed EpiPens. None of them needed to be hospitalized during the study. So, and when you're starting to treat them, you're giving them, protein powders, about 300 milligrams of protein powder. And that's the equivalent of about, 3 or 4 peanuts. So you're exposing them early. You're training their bodies. And a lot of times when you give them peanut butter early, they're not going to have a peanut reaction at all. So the main thing is that you're not really going to harm your child by giving them peanuts. If there's a family history of allergies, right? Someone else in the family has a peanut allergy as opposed to no family history, you'll be vigilant and you can speak to your physician first about what to do and how much to give. But, sometimes you'll give a tiny little fingernail's worth of peanut butter to the child to see how they do. And that's basically what's being recommended now.
I'd be doing that right there in your waiting room. That's what I'd be doing.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the thing too. You can, if they have an allergist or family physician, they say, I want to give my child a bit of peanut. That's what's one of the possible solutions to reduce anxiety about trying that. But for most children, peanut allergies, I don't quote me on this because I read this a while ago and I'm just trying to remember. But it's not it's about 2-4% of children may have peanut allergies. So it's not a huge, huge number in a total population. And even those, when you break them down, are mild, right? So most of them are going to be mild, especially for younger children. So it's a reasonable means under proper supervision, if a child has a peanut allergy, to use this protein powder and reduce their risk over time. Now, they have to take this all the time, though. That's the only thing, is that treatment is ongoing. It's not a cure. It's a way to manage the allergy. So they have to take these doses of peanut powder lifelong to keep that allergic reaction.
Doc, that's the only reason I eat so much peanut butter, is I just want to maintain my ability to consume it.
That's a good strategy. Yeah.
Thank you, Doc. Have a good one.
Thanks, you too, Bill.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, medical myth busting, host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Minutes after 7 o'clock, 8 degrees. How are you today? Good Monday morning. Last week of school for a lot of kids.
Already, eh?
Oh, my kids are pumped. Woohoo, yes. They've been counting down the days and we're down to that.
Wow.
So that's exciting. It's another one of the unofficial markers for the beginning of summer, right? There's Victoria Day weekend, right? May 2-4, beginning of summer. Unless you're a kid, then it's the last day of school is the beginning of summer. And the real beginning of the summer comes around, what, the 20th, 21st?
Tomorrow, 21st, yeah.
Yeah. So they're actually now going to school during summer. Don't tell them that.
That's right.
Because they're going to jump off that bus and come back home. Anyway, it's an exciting day. Somebody please tell the weather that it's summer tomorrow. Because it doesn't seem to know. Now, the way Rosie's forecast is shaping up, it's like summer arrives exactly on time. Because this was a cold, I didn't even feel like a cool spring weekend. It felt like a cold fall weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be winter next week is what it felt like on Saturday.
Yeah, because the Rideau, the wind blowing across the surface made the water look pitch black. You know how a lake or a river changes color when the wind is blowing? Of course, I went down a rabbit hole of trying to understand the optics of that, and I could explain it to you now about the way the sky is reflected on flat water compared to, never mind, you don't care. But we all know that water looks darker when there's wind blowing, and it was black, black, black. It was not inviting looking at all, that's for sure. Okay, I want to just take a moment to do this. I want to read almost verbatim. It's not something I normally do, but I want to read almost verbatim from a CNN article. And the rest of you, if you're not a current member of City Council, you can turn this off. You can
Rosie's joining us at 7:15. We're going to have an important discussion. And this is just for members of City Council, because I think most of the rest of you already know this, but just a little story to share with members of Ottawa City Council. CNN headline, e-scooters were supposed to fix travel in Rome. Then they became death traps. The current invasion of the Italian capital comes from e-scooters. More than 14,000 of them, modern chariots that block sidewalks, unnerve drivers, and kill. Since rental scooters were introduced 3 years ago as an alternative to public transportation during the COVID pandemic, four people have been killed while riding them, according to Rome City Hall Mobility Councilman Eugenio Patani. The city's emergency rooms treat at least one scooter-related major injury every 3 days, health authorities say. And yet only 2%, around 270 of the foot scooters for rent, are used on a daily basis. Rome City Hall has given licenses to seven companies responsible for changing batteries, carrying out repairs, moving scooters to high traffic areas, and fishing them out of the city's Tiber River. It's the scooters that aren't in use that are presenting the greatest challenge, especially to the disabled. As Giuliano Fratelli, head of the Italian Union for the Blind and Visually Impaired, navigates with his walking stick around a half dozen scooters littering the sidewalk near his office in the city center, he tells CNN that for people who don't see, they are a death trap. The first problem is the wild parking, Fratelli says, as he taps his walking stick on the base of a scooter, explaining that their unusual shape, also makes it easier for someone with impaired eyesight to trip over them. He also says that because they're electric, they are silent, which is also a threat to those who cannot see. I could go on. Now, some of this is a familiar story which Ottawa City Council says it's going to fix. The new scooters will continue to charge your Visa card, your credit card, if you don't put it back in the proper place. There's GPS detection to keep you off the sidewalks. They're going to make some sort of noise that they haven't described yet. I hope it's not too ungodly. They'll make some sort of noise to warn you that they're coming. But the takeaway still from me, Not you will be surprised. It's not the danger that they pose, which ultimately I guess City Council will be responsible for when people start to crack their skulls open on them. But the fact that we think we're doing people such a big favor, we're spending all this time and money on this alternative to public transit, so we're competing with ourselves, but that only 2% of the scooters for rent are used on any given day. 2%. And it's a European capital where people are used to walking and biking. It's a handful of people who use these scooters, and they leave them lying everywhere. Maybe that'll change with some of the new rules. But it does pose the question again, do we even need them? And I certainly would say City Council shouldn't be involved. Let the province regulate them. Matt, if you want to start an e-scooter business and rent them out, that's on you. And when I crack my skull open on one, I'm going to sue you. They come with helmets. Do you want to wear a helmet other people have been wearing? That's just got head lice written all over. So nothing about these scooters I find attractive. I wouldn't mind owning one of my own. That's be kind of a cool way to zip around if you live downtown. But do I want the city to provide it for me? No, I really don't. Anyway, this is how they're being. And we're always told, you know, in Europe, this is common. We're supposed to fix travel in Rome. Then they became death traps. They sound delightful, don't they? Morning Rush.
Something good.
Tell me something good.
Powered by Desjardins Good Spark Grants. Recently, Desjardins awarded $3 million in Desjardins Good Spark Grants to 150 Canadian small business owners. See more at goodsparkgrants.ca.
Tell me something good, Matt.
Okay, this story is wild. So a few weeks ago, this happened. And I was just reading about it on the Citizens website, looking for good local, tell me something good stories. So mom's name is Katie. Her son's 2 years old. The son's name is Van. They're at Costco in Barrhaven. And what do they have at Costco? Not just in Barrhaven, but free samples, right? So this one was frozen strawberry. So she gives Van, 2 years old, frozen strawberry. And he starts reacting a little strange. He's like, it's cold. Turns out it wasn't so much that it was cold that it was sparking. That was that it was choking on the food. So he starts choking, can't breathe. Gets really bad to the point where he now has no vital signs.
Come on.
The Costco staff calls 911 and the woman who worked at Costco jumps on the intercom. And she's like, if there's anyone who's a doctor, a nurse, anyone, you need to get to this aisle immediately. Turns out Sophie Barrett, a nurse at the Ottawa hospital, was in the line. She was in Costco. She was shopping. She was in the bread aisle. Hears this, runs over. Now she starts trying to do the Heimlich. Right? Like, I mean, obviously, as you would, because someone's choking. It's not working. Kid's still, he's not breathing. She gets him down, starts doing CPR, no vital signs. It went on for like 3 or 4 minutes of trying to get him back. And then it worked. He started to come back. He started to breathe again, and then he woke up. Imagine all this happening at a Costco.
Do you think that the strawberry, which was frozen, started to melt in his body and it got softer and loosened up?
I don't know what it was, but it was unreal. And anyway, so a few weeks ago, they finally reunited the pair, the mom, Katie, the son, Van, and the nurse, Katie, who just was right place, right time, heard that thing on the intercom saying, if you know first aid, we need you now. And she ran over to see what was up and just didn't give up on the kid, ended up saving him.
Good job, Katie.
Good job, Katie, for sure. And you can go to goodsparksgrant.ca, find out how you can be eligible for that money.
Thanks for telling us something good. 7:31, Brian Lilly of Sun Media decided to poke Ottawa City Council in the eye. This should get their attention. He may be on to something, too. We'll talk about that with Brian coming up next, The Morning Rush.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Wouldn't be surprised if there's a poster at City Hall right now that says Wanted and a picture of Brian Lilly on it from Sun Media. He's writing about the possibility that we should consider shrinking the size of Ottawa City Council. And I mean, pretty drastically. Hello, Brian. I hope you're not coming back to visit family anytime soon in Ottawa.
You know, might be there next week. We'll see. I'll be discreet as I go through the city. Yeah, some people are a little bit upset at me, including people who are still ostensibly friendly with me, because I said, you know what? We got to cut Ottawa City Council instead of letting them expand. Because the weird thing is, they're doing just what Toronto City Council did just before Doug Ford slashed it in half. They're saying, let's add more councillors, because that's what the public wants and needs. And I'm saying Doug Ford should do what he did to Toronto City Council 4 years ago and cut it drastically.
Has anyone noticed in Toronto the cuts that were going to be the end of the world, according to critics at the time? It sounds to me, paying more casual attention to what's going on in Toronto, it sounds like City Council is actually a little less dysfunctional than it used to be.
It is far less dysfunctional. City Council meetings used to go on for 3 and 4 days, and at the end, nothing would be decided. City Council meetings in Ottawa go on for a day, but things are decided. In Toronto, they just became more and more dysfunctional. They cut Toronto City Council in half, at a time when they wanted to expand as well, and brought them down to 25 councillors. Their wards match the federal and provincial ridings, and nobody's noticed. And in this last provincial election, the NDP promised, we'll undo Ford's cuts. Well, guess what? Doug Ford's PC party won as many seats inside Toronto as the NDP and Liberals. They've got 12 seats inside the city of Toronto. If people wanted to go back to the old awful city council, Doug Ford wouldn't have 12 seats inside Toronto city limits. So I'm not saying that Ottawa has to match exactly the federal and provincial boundaries, which by my math would give them about 8 city council seats. But compare Ottawa to somewhere like Mississauga. And, you know, if we went with Mississauga's number of residents per councillor, you'd have about 13 city councillors in Ottawa instead of, after October's election, going up to 24.
So how would you decide what the right number is? Because as you point out in your column, if you follow provincial and federal ridings, you could have municipalities where you'd have like one mayor and one city council member. And so that doesn't necessarily work. That can't be the template for every city. So how would you do it?
I think it depends on various areas. I mean, I also say in the column that areas like Peel Region, York Region, and especially Niagara. Niagara has hundreds of local city officials. It's crazy down there. They've got about 400,000 people, and I think in total, I believe it's over 200 local elected officials of various types, regional councillors, reeves, mayors, all these different things. That needs to be examined. That would take a while to figure out, okay, how are we going to get rid of all those? You can't just announce it and do it quickly. But Ottawa, you could do it quickly. And so look at what other municipalities are doing and the ones that work, not the ones that don't. I don't think Ottawa needs 24 city councillors. And I say this as a longtime resident, longtime taxpayer of Ottawa. I don't think that the city needs to go in that direction. I'm not saying this to someone that hasn't been to the city, doesn't love the city. I'm saying this to someone who does. You don't need to go to 24 city councillors. So look at the proportional representation that other municipalities have. Ottawa has one, will have one councillor for every 41,000 people. In Brampton, it's one for every 63. In Mississauga, it's one for every 75,000. Those are better numbers than what Toronto has. Toronto, it's over 100,000. As I said, it mirrors the federal and provincial ridings. But if you go with what these other places have, you'd still have a small, much smaller city council.
Here's where I was a bit torn about what the premier did, Toronto City Council. I understood that he wanted to fix something that was broken for decades. Mm-hmm. And we all saw during the emergency debates, during the trucker protest, how dysfunctional and petty and political. I mean, look, it's politics, but the way they line up in their little fiefdoms and their friend groups at City Hall, it was beyond embarrassing to watch it at work. And I've been calling for an almost complete sweep of city council members in the upcoming election. So I understand you want to fix that. On the other hand, here's where I'm torn. City government should be the one level of government where you really want access to your city council member. Like, you want to be able to pick up the phone and go, look, I've been trying to get a permit for my back deck now for 8 months. What can you do about it? Who at city staff can you talk to? So you want that kind of accessibility. I would suggest that could be better handled by having more staff for each member of city council, but fewer actual city council members involved in debates.
You could go down to 2 city councillors for each federal and provincial riding and still save money, still make city council work better. And it's not like this always has to be imposed. The city of Kawartha Lakes, which is the area just northwest of Peterborough, a few years ago, they voted to cut their city council in half. Now, you can find a story about this on the Toronto Star website, because they were shocked and aghast at this. You know, how dare you cut politicians? And by the way, notice they gave themselves big raises. It's a part-time job, and they went from $25,000 to $35,000 a year. So they cut it in half, but they did what you're talking about. They made it more accessible, or they made it work better for the residents. They've gone through 2 election cycles like that. The citizens have had an opportunity to reject it and say, let's go back, and they haven't. We don't need to have a huge contingent of politicians to make city council work. Again, I'm not saying go down to 8, which would be the federal and provincial boundaries, but it doesn't need to go to 24. The only people that think that are politicians themselves or the consultants they pay. to come up with reports. If you polled the citizens of Ottawa, I doubt that would be the answer they came up with. And this decision to expand city council, it was done in December 2020 at a time when nobody was paying attention to that. What were we all paying attention to? When's the vaccine coming? Can I get the vaccine? When can my mother in the home get the vaccine? That's what we were paying attention to.
So, Brian, any appetite for this, you think, in the premier's office?
Well, I did an interview with Doug Ford on CFRA in 2018, and I asked him, because everyone was talking about Toronto City Council, and he said it was the second biggest issue he gets after Toronto City Hall. He said, we're not doing it yet, but he'd like to. So I think there's still some appetite for it. That's why I wrote a column encouraging him to do this, saying it should be done before the next election. Ottawa could be done at the drop of a hat. There's still plenty of time to campaign for the current councillors. Most, by the way, most city councillors in Ottawa are not seeking re-election. So this is a good time to do it. So I think there is some appetite for it. I'd encourage him to do it. I know he really wants to deal with Niagara because he's mentioned that several times over his mandate. But again, that's a longer term, more complex one. Ottawa could be done. He could get it done by Canada Day and still give people plenty of time to figure out how to run their campaigns in time for the October election.
All right, members of Ottawa City Council, if you'd like to know where Brian is staying next week while he's here, I'll let you know. I have the address. It's going to cost you some money, though. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Bill.
Brian Lilly of Sun Media, stirring it up at City Hall and at Queen's Park all at the same time. Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Trending. Trending today with Matt Harris.
/7:54, and let's find out what's trending today. It's a man with a bicycle.
A man.
Not just any man.
With a bicycle, and that man is the leader of the free world. Joseph R. Biden was in Delaware, his home state.
Be afraid.
And so I think what happened was people are saying that he looks old and frail.
You know why they're saying that, Matt?
Is it because he looks old and frail?
Because he looks old and frail.
And sometimes,
I mean, he's probably fitter than I'll look at that age if I even make it that far.
Well, that's what I was thinking watching him on the bike, actually, on the weekend. Like, he actually looked in better shape in those bike shorts than I think he does in a suit when he's up at the stage and forgets where he is. Like, he actually looked pretty good.
Yeah, he keeps himself in overall good shape. There's no doubt about
yeah.
that. But I don't think it's body that's failing him as much as it's the mind.
Yeah, I think there's some legitimate concerns there. But he was coming in on his bicycle, and then this happened. I'll play you a really short clip here. You'll hear some commotion. You'll hear his reaction, and then I'll explain what we heard. So that's the president yelling, "I'm good, I'm good." So,
I'm good, in a way that says, "I'm not good."
Exactly, yeah. So he's coming in on his bicycle, and he takes his left foot out of the pedal. You know those little clips that you have for pedals? Takes his left foot out, and instead of leaning to his left as you would when you take that foot out, he leaned over to his right and totally fell off his bike.
But you could see he was struggling with his right foot. You could see it was sort of jammed or something.
Yeah.
But lean on the left foot while you unjam the right. I would never want those pedals. Sorry, I want to be able to get my foot down in an emergency.
No, and that's the thing. I'm not a cyclist, but I have an exercise bike. It's stationary in the basement, and they'd make you clip in on those. I struggle with that, let alone moving. I'm not...
Yeah, when you have those clips, you see the guys at red lights doing the balance dance.
Instead of unclipping, yeah.
They don't want to unclip and put their feet down, so they're pedaling back and forth, and they're wiggling, and they're trying to keep the bike up. It's kind of impressive. Like, well, I'd fall over for sure.
I would, totally. But
so will Joe Biden, apparently.
Instead of us kind of, you know, analyzing the video to see what happened, let's let the president himself tell us what happened.
You okay, Mr. President?
Are you okay,
I'm
Mr.
good.
President?
Yeah.
Keep up the good work.
I keep on taking these things off. I got my foot caught in it.
He was pointing to the pedal. He didn't have the thing off. Now, here's the thing. He said, yeah, too many times for me to not think he hurt himself just a little bit. He's like, I'm good. Yeah.
He's a little shocked too. It's embarrassing, yeah, shocking.
And it's bad enough when you and I do it and we look up and there's like a guy in his car. No, you've got TV cameras everywhere. You're the president of the United States. The whole press corp is there.
And when you're the president of the United States and your vocabulary is down to can't get the thing on the thing with the thing. What thing?
But
the pedal clip?
Yeah, he struggled a little bit. He put his helmet back on. Or maybe maybe he never took it off. But then he got on his bike and he drove away and he talked to the crowd as he did it.
And I'm ready to go. All right, guys. See ya.
See ya.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. But at the same time, you're the president of the United States. I thought when Donald Trump was no longer the president, okay, someone who's a little more clear of thought will come along. But no.
No. I did see a hilarious meme this morning, though. It said, Happy Father's Day. And it was the dad, Donald Trump, pushing little Joe, the son, on a bike with training wheels. And I don't know why I found that one so funny.
The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. You know, it's not the same
as it was in this world. Good morning, Ottawa. This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Matt and I were just talking about the charity that he's involved with and how tough it is right now to get people to volunteer. It's hard enough to get people to come and work for money. And he works with a particular charity where you know, work with people who have cancer. And so you have to wear masks and people are just exhausted doing it. It's tough. And we're talking about that because management asked us to help another organization that's in a similar situation looking for volunteers. The organization is Able Two, and they really need you to help. Heather Lacey is their executive director and on the line right now. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good, thank you. What is Able Two and what do you do?
So Able Two actually has been around and in the Ottawa community for many, many years. We actually were called Citizen Advocacy of Ottawa. And then about 2 years ago, just changed our name to Able To. We have a mission that talks about inclusive communities where we see all people as able, important, and valued. So, and we support all types of disabilities across all ages, so people with physical, intellectual, developmental, age-related disabilities or mental health challenges. And
since it's radio, let's just point out, if you're Googling it, Able 2, it's the word able and then the number 2.
That's correct, yeah.
The number 2 has some significance, I think, that really is important to talk about for the purpose of this conversation, which is, I'll let you describe it. Why the number 2?
Right, so it's about our matching program, and it really does take two people. So our matching program connects people with disabilities to their communities. Volunteers are matched on a one-to-one basis with a person with a disability. So that's where the two comes from. And the matching program was actually the program that really started Citizen Advocacy. So it is a really important program for us. You know, people with disabilities tend to have fewer people in their lives and are often more socially isolated than the average person. So when you have a friend, and your listeners will know this, you value your connections. People, you know, you have friends and they can help you out. You go out for coffee. You can talk about different things that are going on in your lives. It's really important for people with disabilities to have that connection, and volunteers provide that.
Put a number on it for us. Can you do that, Heather? How many people in Ottawa are we talking about here that we would consider living with a disability of one kind or another? You named a bunch of them.
There's probably, I can't say accurately, but I would imagine more than 160,000 people would have some form of disability.
That's a lot of people in a city of a million.
It is. Well, and when you consider aging as well, right, you know, as all of us get older, there are many times when we will develop some type of disability. You could break a hip. You can, you know, have other mobility issues. I mean, and we're an aging population. So the disability population is growing. So
I knew a guy in Toronto
that was always really busy. And one of the things he liked to do was go to the local seniors home and help out. Mm-hmm. And he would talk about, you know, I got to help the seniors. These people are not very, he was 92. And he would go there and help many people younger than he was. But he was one of the lucky ones, right? He was still physically very strong and very healthy. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how much satisfaction he got out of that and how many great friendships that he's made. And there's really nothing makes your heart feel better, I think, than helping other people in some way. But
absolutely.
How tough is it right now, Heather, though, when we've come through a pandemic? People are used to working at home. Some are a little afraid still to interact with other people. Is it more difficult than usual to get volunteers?
Yeah. So it's even though we seem to be coming out of that pandemic mode, we're still not at pre-pandemic levels for recruiting of volunteers. Currently, we have 180 individuals with disabilities on our wait list waiting to be matched. And COVID's really, really impacted our ability to recruit. The nice thing is, though, that we have opportunities for people to engage both virtually and in person. So, you know, so a volunteer and the person they're matched with can decide how they want to interact, right? So if there is still a little bit of fear there, then there's a virtual option too.
So the only thing that's left is how do we do that? If you're listening right now and you're moved by this and you recognize that if you're lucky, one day it'll be you, right? Because the alternative to getting old is not a good one. And so, right? And so you're right. We're all going to have some sort of issues. It can be hip issues, knee issues, vision issues, hearing issues. There's so many, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So where do I go?
So you can go to our website and you at able2.org, you can sign up as a volunteer through the website. You can actually email us at info@able2.org, or you can call at 613-761-9522. And let us know that you're interested in volunteering, and we'll walk you through the process.
I'm going to get you to give the number one more time here in a second. Go grab a pen, pencil, if you're listening right now. Go grab one. I'll give you a second. Go ahead. We got nothing but time here, Heather. We'll let people do that. We'll also get Matt to post this information on our social media to make it easier for people to find and link to. Okay, got the pencil ready, guys? Okay, here we go. Write it down. What's the phone number again?
613-761-9522.
Thank you, Heather. You keep up the good work, and I hope you get a few calls and emails today with people willing to help out.
Thank you so much, Bill. We really appreciate you having us on this morning.
Happy to do it. Thank you, Heather.
Okay, take care. Bye.
You too. Heather Lacey, Executive Director of Able2. Remember when she said able2.org as well, it's A-B-L-E, then the number 2. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
All right, Matthew, if that's your name.
That is my name.
Who's joining us today?
Deborah's on the line.
From?
Don't know. We can ask her together.
Hello, Deborah from Don't Know. How are you?
From Nepean.
Where are you calling from?
Nepean.
All right. Do you know the rules?
Yes, I do.
All right. So I won't even repeat them for you. Just focus on one thing. One thing.
What's that?
Say pass if you're not sure. Do not spend like 20 seconds waiting.
Okay.
We can go back. Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
Question number one. When is the first day of summer?
The 21st.
Who plays Michael Peterson in the HBO series The Staircase?
Pass.
How many people have been killed riding scooters in Rome?
4.
Which union represents airport workers who are starting job action today?
United Steelworkers Union.
Which state was Joe Biden in when he fell off his bike?
His home state.
When does the federal vaccine mandate expire?
Today.
In which country was Paul Haggis arrested?
Italy.
Who is the executive director of Able2?
Heather Lacey.
What's forecast at high tomorrow?
Is 21.
Which team will the Red Blacks play in their home game next week?
BC Lions.
Who plays Michael Peterson in the HBO series The Staircase?
Colin Firth.
Wow. You're not messing around.
No, we still have a ton of time left.
That was unbelievable. You answered every question. But did you answer them correctly?
That's all right, the question. Let's see. When is the first day of summer? You said June 21st, which is right. Yeah, it's tomorrow, June 21st. How many people have been killed riding scooters in Rome? You said 4. Which union represents airport workers who are starting job action today? You said the United Steelworkers Union.
Weird, right?
It's an odd one. Stood out to me. Which state was Joe Biden riding his bike in when he fell off? You said his home state, which is correct. His home state of Delaware. When is the federal vaccine mandate expected to expire? You sounded like you hesitated a bit on this one, but you said today. There you go. In which country was Paul Haggis arrested? You said Italy. Who is the executive director of Able 2? You said Heather Lacey. What's the forecasted high tomorrow? You said 21 degrees. That's 8 for 8. Which team do the Red Blacks play in their home opener game or their home game next week? You said the BC Lions.
Wow. Okay. 9 for 9. We haven't given $1,000 away in a while.
It's been a while.
Been a couple of weeks. So, Deborah, you passed on this, and then you came back and took another shot. We had lots of time. The question was, who plays Michael Peterson in the HBO series The Staircase? Matt, what did she say?
She said Colin Firth.
Is that for $1,000 the correct answer? Yes, it is!
Hey!
You have just won $1,000, Deborah.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Amazing. You were writing down notes all morning, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
You do that every day on the off chance you might get to be the 15th person?
Not really, because I usually get through. I usually try 1 or 2 days.
Well, good for you. That's impressive. Yeah. And enjoy your $1,000 check.
Will do. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
You could buy $1,000 worth of groceries with that, unless you wait next week to cash it, in which case you get $500 worth of groceries.
You spend it now.
But spend it fast. No point in hanging on to money these days. I have a savings account. I have 0.2% interest rate on this, and I just keep my money there and watch it shrink. It's the Morning Rush. Some great binge-watching ideas coming up. I have one I'm really excited about. Matt is kind of okay. Matt, I'm not wrong. Compared to mine.
It's not going to be the best show you ever watch, but it's worth your time.
After you watch mine, which is awesome.
There you go.
Coming up next, The Morning Rush.
Now, The Inbox. Everybody's talking about. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
Bill, Matt, did I hear right that the government is paying a bonus to employees that don't take vacation or sick time? Yes, if you were listening on Friday.
You did.
That's a slow motion text that arrived to us. But yeah, at airports. Defeats the argument for more sick days, doesn't it? It certainly does. Thank you, Mike in Cornwall. Morning rush. Curious, but if Ottawa Airport is running at what I think is about 1/3 of capacity, doesn't it make sense that they have 1/3 less staff? I'm sure at busy airports it's a problem, but hard to think they're really that overworked at our airport, Shannon in Kanata. I've talked to a couple of people who've come through the Ottawa airport just in the last week or two. Doesn't seem to be nearly as bad there. The problem is, generally, if you're going anywhere worth going, you end up going through Pearson. Sometimes Montreal, depending on the direction you're going in, that could be okay, but... Yeah, it's that Pearson hub you end up getting stuck at. The bigger issue is if they ban trans athletes. We're talking about swimming. They're banning trans athletes who haven't transitioned before the age of 12. Okay, so let's think about that. The reason is until puberty kicks in, boys and girls physiologically are more the same. So I think that all but really bans them entirely, because not many kids under 12 are going through full transitions. That's what upset Elaine. How can we allow parents to give their children puberty blockers and medical surgeries under the assumption these children have made up their minds and can take these decisions? When I was 12, I wanted metal inserts in my hands so I could be Wolverine. My mom told me I could wait until I was 18, at which point I realized that's not such a good idea. He wrote that would be crazy, but parents are pushing this onto their kids as a type of vicarious political ideology. It's wrong. You could argue the case for child abuse. I certainly hope no parent is pushing their kid to do anything, and especially not for political ideology. I guess in the end, I'm going to leave that between a child, parents, and doctors who know better than I do. But I have to say I understand your first reaction to it. If a child has come to you at 8 years old and says, I know I was born a girl, but I feel more like a boy, I don't have any problem with proceeding and say, okay, well, you know, let's, what do you want to do about that? You want to use a boy's name? You want to wear different clothes? I'm okay with that. But can we wait? I think you're right. Can we wait till after puberty? It can have profound changes on how we feel about ourselves. But again, I guess I'll have to leave that up to the doctors. Don't laugh at older people falling, because that's bad karma. Especially you, Bill, because with your foggy brain, it could be you. Matt, you're making Fox News happy.
Ouch.
Because you're taking a shot at Joe Biden. Yeah, here's the thing. If the average 70-year-old fell off the bike, how old's Joe now?
79.
Okay, the average 79-year-old falls off a bike, I wouldn't even talk about it. I'd just run over and help him and say, good for you for riding a bike. The guy is the leader of the most powerful nation on earth, and he keeps falling. It's an important and significant question to ask about his physical and mental health, as it was about Donald Trump and as we did about Donald Trump. Certainly weren't helping Fox News then. If Trump fell off his bike, the Democrats would be screaming for his removal under the 25th Amendment. Even the Morning Rush used to mock Trump for slurring a word. Meanwhile, Biden can't string three sentences together, falls up the stairs of Air Force One numerous times, falls off his bike, and can't remember the names of his cabinet appointments. You didn't finish that thought, whoever that is, by the way. Right? Even the Morning Rush used to mock Trump. Yes, they did. And they are now pointing out the same issues with Joe Biden. That's called fair and even-handed. Absolutely. Were you, though, whoever wrote that to me, were you defending Trump at the time? Because now you can't criticize Biden. But we asked the same questions about Trump's mental abilities that we're now asking about Joe Biden's. And given what they do for a living, or what Donald Trump did for a living at the time, I think those are valid questions. That's it for me. Who's coming up next? Well, you never quite know. That's why we have the Wheel of Hosts. Who will be joining us today? Man, woman, boy, girl, TV, radio, stranger.
Real TV celebrity. Do you want to take a guess now that I've narrowed it down?
Patricia Bowles.
Yes.
Are you feeling it? I'm feeling a pattern.
The legend herself. I'm feeling a pattern too.
If a pattern sets in, the wheel is lost.
Sources say that pattern's going to be disrupted very soon.
So I guess we'll keep up the wheel, because you're saying maybe tomorrow it's not Graham.
Next week might be different.
Well, I'm going to spin the wheel until I really see a pattern.
I see my name on the wheel, and I'm just thinking one day it might land on
me. Your name is on the wheel?
My name's on. It hasn't landed yet, but
Please tell me my name is not on the wheel.
I don't see it here.
Okay, good. I'm not doing two shows. Been there, done that. That's it for me. Patricia Bowles is next. It's the Morning Rush. I'm Bill Carroll.